Good evening, good citizens. Welcome to December 2022's Dante's Old South. I'm your host, Clifford Brooks, and this evening we'll be hearing from Jump Little Children, now on their farewell tour, and those behind the Writer's Hotel and how you can get involved with it. I want to thank WUTC and NPR, Richard Wenham, Michael Amade, the Red Phone Booth, and Lyndon Rowe Inn. Y'all, get ready to do it. And here we go with Suburban Trees by Jump Little Children.
Sets on the power lines, and things have changed. Things have changed. Credits on the wall, scrolling ultra fish, static on the call, applauding the decision. End of the world is playing on the radio. Mirror, saw a never-ending tear. You said
said you recognize the look behind his eyes. The enemy's the only one near. You take a deep breath to try and let the cold escape. But things have changed. Things have changed.
Credits on the wall, scrolling ultra vision, static on the call, applauding the decision. End of the world is playing on the radio. Credits on the wall, scrolling ultra vision, static on the call, applauding the decision. End of the world is playing on the radio. On the wall, scrolling out your vision, static on the call, applauding the decision. End of the world is playing on the radio. Credits on the wall, scrolling out your vision, static on the call, applauding the decision. End of the world is playing on the radio. Makes me feel the way when we were young.
And now on Dante's Old South, we have Jay Clifford, frontman of Jump Little Children, whose music haunts me like Beethoven. And he's definitely the sonic brother of Jeff Buckley. Jay Clifford, how you doing?
What's up, Cliff? Thanks so much for having me, man. I really appreciate it. So good to be here.
It's a
love the way you say my name, by the way.
Well, you know, since your last name is my first name, it's real easy. It's real. That's right. It's fluid. That's right. That way. And I swore before we came on the air that I would get all my fanboy out, but the fact that we share that one thing somehow makes me feel better in life and stronger as a poet. Man, to start the show, y'all are going on your farewell tour this year, man. That's painful and gorgeous at the same time. So tell me about your feelings.
It's hard to describe, man, because it's been 30 years, you know. So when this kind of thing comes around, it's really a once-in-a-lifetime event. And you kind of feel like you're looking at the sunrise and the sunset at the same time. It's this kind of collage, this mosaic of emotions, feelings, you know, just thoughts, experiences. It's been one of the greatest adventures I could ever have hoped for, to be in this band, and to see it come to an end kind of makes me emotional just even talking about it.
Me too. Me too. It's the family feel, the hard times, the good times. Yeah. Give me some high and low points of the band's history.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a deep brotherhood that comes from 30 years. And to see that evolve and change and kind of have a shattering is a difficult thing to be a part of, because, you know, I love these guys. They are, you know, we went to high school together, went to the School of the Arts together in North Carolina, and studied classical music and then started playing traditional Irish music and then started writing songs. And so that deep sense of connection, that deep sense of tribe is something that I don't think I'll ever recapture, because it's such a unique experience to play music with someone else and to have that relationship. And so I don't know that I'll experience that ever again quite in the same way. So there's that aspect of it. But it's filled with just joyous memories, you know, just emotional highs, you know, seeing the reactions from the fans, getting that connection with a large group of people who want to come see you play. That connection between performer and audience is also something incredibly unique that I think will just live inside me forever. So, yeah, we've been through a lot, you know, been through a lot over the years. A lot of successes, a lot of failures. But what I'm hoping is that we have some kind of lasting legacy. We make some slight impression into the Southern music scene that might have a chance to last.
And you do last. You do last, and you have lasted. I found you in the early 2000s, and you have gotten me through some really hard stuff. And your other fans feel as passionately as I do because you have a Patreon page up, and they have done some incredible things, and I want them to continue to do so. So if you talk to me more about that, I would love it.
Yeah, we started the Patreon page back in March of 2019 in an effort to get us to our sixth studio album. And it has been an unbelievable experience because, you know, the goal was to get to the album, but along the way, we have all this other stuff happening. Like we have the podcast called Cool Demo, which is about the making of our last record, Sparrow. And it's just a really fun and engaging conversation between myself and one of the other members of the band at a time. And we listen to individual tracks. We open up the master files of the record, Sparrow, and we listen to individual tracks because behind every, you know, guitar take and cello performance and accordion or background vocal or string performance, whatever it is, there's this story that leads you to that interesting conclusion, which is the take that makes it onto the record. And so it's a lot of fun to talk about how records come together. But then, of course, we put out, you know, live shows and B-sides. We've put out like 50 or so rare tracks, that kind of thing. But then the main goal of the record is to write, of the Patreon page, is to write for the next record. And so I would just put out these demos, wrote 18 new songs, and you have this really interesting direct connection between yourself and the listener that gets all of the apparatus of the music industry out of the way. There's nothing in between, because I just would make the demo here in my little studio and put it out that day, and then the patrons listen to it, they make comments, they start sort of collecting these songs and making their own versions of the album. And then by the end, we started making our new record, Foundering, in February of this year. And so in January of this year, we, as a group, we all voted on what 12 songs we wanted to include in the album. So we got a direct a reflection back from the audience.
That is such a rare opportunity, and tell me about some of the. I mean, it's to have that happen, just to sit here glowing on my end, man. The songs going into this last album. Tell me how the fans picked, how this thing is designed. How is your farewell album different from your other albums?
Well, I think the main difference is that we have a lot of special guests. So we have, you know, like Carrie Ann Hurst from Shovels and Rope, who is a dear old friend of ours. I remember seeing her play the first time when she was a teenager, and absolutely just tears rolling down my face when she's just doing her things, singing a beautiful song. And just to watch her success has been incredibly gratifying. But so she sang a duet with me on a song called Young Again, which was a song about my wife's father who passed away a few years ago. And in the last few weeks of his life, he was constantly singing old country songs. He was singing Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard and Dolly Parton. And there was this sort of frozen moment in time in which for those last few weeks of his life, he was young again. He was a boy. And to watch that sort of transformation was just incredibly impactful. So I just feel incredibly lucky to have such a beautiful voice like Carrie Ann's on the record to kind of reflect the feminine side of that story, because he has two daughters, so who cared for him very sweetly at the very end of his life. But to listen to her sing that song with such heart was such a high point of making this record. But then we have other special guests like Ruby Amanfu, who's an incredible singer, songwriter from Nashville, originally from Ghana. And then we have Christina Cohn, who's from the band Francis Cohn, kind of an indie pop band. Mm-hmm. And then my good friend Travis McNabb on drums, who's played with Better Than Ezra and Sugarland. He was actually on my first solo record. He did the drums for that as well. So it was great, just incredible to collaborate with him again. So the special guests were just a huge part of making this record.
What keeps you optimistic?
That's a great question, because I don't have a real distinct answer for you, because
good.
I think if I did, then it would be sort of like magic in a bottle where you could sell the idea. But I don't think that's the way optimism works. I think optimism is something that is built into your system as a young person. It's either wired in to you innately, or it's taught to you at a very young age, and it sticks. It's very, very difficult to construct optimism into a system that's not used to it. It's a real challenge.
Brother, let me back up and look at that answer again one time. The song Mother's Eyes is one of my favorites. And as you talk about that and with, those early years, tell me about the song Mother's Eyes. Where did that come from?
Mother's Eyes, some of the songs that I write are written in sort of a emotional fervor that is really interesting to try and analyze. And I'm also sort of cautious to analyze it too, because I don't really want to understand how it works, because mm-hmm. I think if I did, that might actually make it more difficult to happen naturally. And we can kind of dive into that more if you want to later. But so in an emotional fervor, that song was written about my wife's mother. My wife Stacy and I met, fell in love, and at the same time, her mom was dying from breast cancer. And so it was just a couple of weeks into our just emotional high of falling in love that she started to pass away. And I knew that she, if she had lived, would have been the grandmother to my kids. And so to see that sort of like fracturing of the future was a really difficult thing to handle. So that's where the song came from, was out of this sort of wish that the future could be different.
So tell me about even digging and diving deeply into the soul to make the music happen. Let's do that right now.
Yeah, well, when you're in, and when you get caught in a moment of kind of a flow, It's a subjective experience in which you have just like a string connecting you and this balloon that starts to float up into the air, and you start to see things from a different perspective, and then it bounces back to you. It's this sort of lens reflection that warps your subjective experience to a certain degree, so that you almost feel as if, as I think singer-songwriters and poets and authors talk about some force working through you. I think that's an incredibly accurate way to think about it. Mm-hmm. It's not a complete way to think about it, because there's so much mystery within that statement. But you are just suddenly, in a way, noticing a distinct difference about yourself, almost as if you're looking at yourself in a funhouse mirror or something, or feeling what it feels like to be inside your body from a different point of view. And it's a beautiful experience, because you don't really know how to get it started or when it's going to stop or what happens. And so you just kind of go with this feeling and this emotion and let the music emerge. Very difficult to describe, and I don't think I did a very good job there.
It was gorgeous, dude. It was gorgeous, man. This is one of the best moments of my life. And to back up from a big fan moment to one from the beginning, because I want this on my show, and I'm sure you've answered this a bazillion times. Where did your band title Jump Little Children come from?
Well, that's from a blues song by Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, who were artists that, folk blues singers from right around Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where I grew up. And they have a song called Jump Little Children, and the basic premise of the song is that now that Mama and Papa are gone, we can have a good time. So that Mama and Papa left the house, so we can have fun. That was the original intent there. We played that song a lot at shows in the very early days. So it became our name.
Man, that's to sit here and have this moment is something that I never in my wildest dreams thought would happen. And I mean that from every aspect of the cosmos, man. Before I let you go, please tell me a few things that you'd like others that would want to come up in your footsteps to play music and make music matter. What's some advice you can give them?
Well, I love the way that you frame that question, because making music matter, it has to matter to you. It has to matter to the person writing the song. That's what's most important. It's difficult to get to that point at which you're writing something that means a lot to you, enough to you, that it doesn't influence your feeling about that song when you play it for other people. Like, there's going to be some times where you play a song that means an enormous amount to yourself and it doesn't connect to some other person. That's okay. Give it some time and just know that the love that you have for that song is what really, really matters. And then eventually, the audience will be there.
And they always will be. They always will be. Jay Clifford, the front man of Jump Little Children, it is an unspeakable honor to have you on the show. Anytime you want to come back, hang out, talk about anything that you want in the news or the world, I would love to give you the platform to do that.
Would love to, man. Thank you so much. The honor's mine.
And before we head on our next guest, let's hear Young Again by Jump Little Children.
Thank you. bottle in the wind, a bottle in the rain, storing every grain of truth from the fertile plains. Pocket in the change in the weather, locking up the gate where the heather grows. No one's gonna steal his name.
Bottle in the rain, bottle in the wind, taking every wailing soul that the wind blows in. Laying all the cards on the table, letting every babe from the cradle know things will never be the same.
Now he lives with the saints and souls, everybody tells you so. He had one last chance to sing the old song, one last verse of Remember Me. He had one last dream, singing through the fields, one last chance to be young again. Bottle in the wind, bottle in the rain, catching every wisp of smoke from the burning pain. Breaking every chain, every fever, saving every tear till the river flows, going back from where it came. Now he lives with the saints and souls, everybody tells you so. Higher ground with the myths we're told, but how can anybody know? He had one last chance to sing the old song, one last verse of Remember Me. And he had one last dream, singing through the fields, one last chance to be home again. One last verse of Remember Me. He had one last dream, singing through the fields, one last chance to be young again.
And up now on Dante's, we have Shanna McNair and Scott Wolven, two of the brilliant minds behind the Writers Hotel in New York, New York. Shanna, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me, Scott.
Scott, how are you doing, Scott?
I'm humbled beyond words and honored.
That's the best answer. Not even something I suggested earlier, but perfect for this show. Shanna, we're going to talk about the Writers Hotel in a moment, but I love to dig into the people that are behind that. So tell me about novels and stories. How does that fill a niche?
So right now I'm writing a novel and stories. It started off as a short story collection, and then I figured out that it actually was meant to be a novel. So I expanded it to become a novel. I'm working on a book called Funhouse, and I'm in the final editing stages of it. It's really exciting. It was 40,000 words, and now it's 59,000 words, and it is an actual factual novel. I'd been talking to an agent about it, and she had these great suggestions, and it just set me on fire. And I wrote 19,000 words in 3 weeks, and it's taken me, you know, probably 11 years to make this novel actually a novel. But there it is, and I'm just really excited to see what happens next. So novels and stories are a niche of it's a genre. I also write autofiction, and I'm really heartened right now because Annie Ernaux, French writer Annie Ernaux, just won the Nobel, and she writes autofiction, as do I. So I just feel heartened, you know. So,
Scott, what are you into?
I write crime fiction.
What makes your crime fiction different from others?
Usually I set my crime fiction in rural settings. That's what I like. That's what I gravitate toward. And a lot of times, you know, you might call my crime fiction noirish. And I always think it's sort of my personal take on noir. So I like that a lot.
What makes your take on noir different from others?
I guess usually the characters in my stories, they drink a little, they drug a little bit, maybe more than a little bit. They're usually pretty pretty handy with guns. It's that old saying, you know, fiction is the lie through which we tell the truth. So I guess there must be some kind of truth I'm trying to tell there by lying.
We have so much to talk about off camera. So much to talk about. Shanna, you gave us the technical overview of what you do, but I want to understand the soul of why you do it. So what I'm asking you is, why are stories important to you?
I feel that as a writer, I have the ability to be a musician, an artist, a potter. I can write about a whole symphony. I can write about the universe. I can put anything I want to in a story. And I do believe that I pray to story. I pray to the muse of story. That sounds a little bit off, but what I'm trying to say is, stories mean more to me than anything else. And I think you can inhabit a story in a way that you can't inhabit any other art form. So I'm always looking for the story within whatever it is I'm observing. I feel like I'm just really lucky that I get to have this outlet too. And it just makes me happy to be able to tell stories and listen to stories and find new stories. It's really everything to me.
Let's get to the focus of why I found you. Shannon, tell me about the Writer's Hotel.
All right. So the Writer's Hotel, Scott and I, Scott and I are together. We run this machine together of the Writer's Hotel. We came up with the idea when we were staying at a hotel, and we thought, geez, you know, we could have a kind of a pop-up where we could teach in different hotels, because there's this idea of, you know, this idea where if you're a writer and you're staying in a hotel and you're working on your writing, maybe you'll meet with your editor in New York City. I mean, it's just this kind of interesting little idea. And you know, within the night, we had figured out how we could have a pop-up in New York City, that we'd go to the Algonquin, we'd play Wink Murder, and, like, you know, talk about Dorothy Parker and all this stuff. So we did it. And, you know, we have had pop-ups in New York City and Midtown. How many? Six or seven of them.
Right.
And then the pandemic hit. And so we went virtual, and we're finally going to be able to actually have one in Maine, because we can't go back to New York City right now. There's just too many working parts to have a pop-up in New York City. I mean, we had so many different places we went to, like from Kinokuniya to, you know, KGB Bar to Bryant Park Hotel, Library Hotel. It's just too many points of entry during this kind of, you know, post-pandemic, we hope, world. So we're going to have a single entry place in Maine and Booth Bay at Spruce Point Inn next May. We're really excited about that. We finally get to be in person again, which is our heart's desire. So that's a little bit of an overview. We've been able to work with some really wonderful luminaries, poets, the U.S. Poets Laureate, Joy Harjo, you know.
Ada Limón.
Yeah. She just got elected to be the new Poet Laureate. We've worked with Mary Gateskill, Lydia Yuknovich, Rick Moody.
Juan Felipe Herrera.
Marie Howe, Sapphire. It's just been such joy to be able to work with these incredible writers and see how they approach writing and how they figure story in poetry. So it's just been quite a gift to be able to do this, and to be able to do it with the love of my life is, you know, even more joy for me. So that's the Writer's Hotel.
Scott, man, what's your take on the whole business?
I think that one of the things that we wanted to do was we wanted to be able to read whole manuscripts.
Right.
That's kind of a rare circumstance in a writer's life, especially early career. And it's a really necessary component. So we started to do that, read people's entire manuscripts. And that
even
way,
before we met in New York City, we'd read the whole manuscript. It's pretty great.
In that way, you get to talk about everything. So it's not just a writer. It's not just reading 50 pages and then the writer sort of tells us about the end. We've read it. We participated in it as readers, and we then have an editorial eye, and we try to suggest those changes that help the manuscript and help the writer find their own voice. That was a component we wanted to build in. The other thing was that I think that having a faculty that we have folks who have taught for us for a long time. Jeffrey Ford comes to mind, Elizabeth Hand, amazing writers and fantastic teachers. And I think that we have kept our faculty nuanced and new so that it ends up that we have a lot of folks who return to the Writer's Hotel to continue to work on their material and to continue to pursue their writing career. And that's, I find that to be valuable as well, that they see different faculty over the course of years, meet with different agents. I think there's a benefit there.
There's a benefit to knowing y'all. There's a benefit that this Writer's Hotel exists. When I was looking for hubs of genuine folks, this was the first one that popped up. So, I mean, I want to thank y'all for what y'all are doing. And before I let y'all go, and we'll have you back on anytime you've got something new to talk about. But to end this session, tell folks how they can find out about you online.
Absolutely. We are online at www.writershotel.com. And we have several different programs we offer, from working with writers one-on-one to our in-person conferences and our online conferences, probably just be in person from, you know, 2023 on. We also run a literary review called The New Guard, which is at www.newguardreview.com. And we really care about being good members of the literary community. I hope people will slide us an email anytime, ask us any questions they have. We really want to give back. We feel very fortunate that we've been able to carve out a life with writing at the center. Find us. We're here.
Scott, give me your last thoughts, please, sir.
I think, you know, you have to shoot to score. That's from the soccer great Johan Cruyff. You know, I'm Dutch, so Cruyff is my inspiration. And I think as a writer, you have to shoot to score. And sometimes that means, you know, stealing time from our own family and things. We're all thieves of time because writing takes time. So steal the time that you need and shoot to score. You know, you're the only one that can tell the story that you're writing. You're the only one that has that voice. And I think that's an important component of what everyone does when they're at their desk, you know?
I do. And more should. And you guys are showing folks exactly how to do that. And it's rare. It's rare what y'all do. Shanna, like Banana McNair, and Scott Wolven from the Writers Hotel, the brains behind the entire business. Thank y'all so much for being on the show this evening.
Clifford, thanks so much. Clifford. Really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
It's always a ridiculous pleasure, a true honor to sit here with y'all once a month with WTC and NPR to talk about life and love and song and all the things that make us forget that sometimes this life is not really as happy as we wish it could be, but it can be. I want to thank our guests this evening. I want to thank you for showing up. And as the new year approaches, as the holidays near, I hope that all of you are happy, content, and see nothing but stars in the night sky. Y'all be good to one another. Good night.
They're hanging the stockings, they're putting up the tree. They strung the house with Christmas lights so everyone can see. They're having Christmas parties with eggnog and mistletoe. They're exchanging thoughtful presents with everyone they know. They got all the ones that they love with them tonight, with the snow softly falling in the pale moonlight. It all seems so perfect sitting by the tree. Everybody seems so happy, everybody but me. It's Christmas and I don't feel a thing. It's Christmas and I don't feel a thing. They're singing Christmas carols, standing in the street. They're watching Christmas movies, the best ones on repeat. They're eating fancy chocolates and chewing candy canes. They're listening to Christmas songs, they know all the reindeer names. It's a season of togetherness, of gratitude and love, the goodwill toward people to put higher things above. But I just can't seem to find the spark, so dark that I can see. Can somebody find a doctor who can fix what's wrong with me? It's Christmas and I don't feel a thing. It's Christmas and I don't feel a thing. Christmas and I don't feel a thing. It's Christmas and I don't feel a thing. They got all the ones that they love with them tonight, with the snow softly falling in the pale moonlight. But I just can't seem to find the spark. It's so dark that I can see. Can somebody find a doctor who can fix what's wrong with me? It's Christmas and I don't feel a thing. It's Christmas and I don't feel a thing. It's Christmas
and I don't feel a thing.
It's Christmas